So welcome to the Atom Podcast. I'm here with Irene Grant from Craig Elkey Consulting. Yes, I got that right. Hello, Irene.
Hi.
And we're here today to talk about mentoring, coaching, and hopefully touch a little bit on women in business.
So that sounds great.
Lots of big topics. So Irene, do you want to kind of give a little bit of background? You have had an illustrious career at HSBC. Can you talk a little bit about your background and what brought you into mentoring, coaching business?
Yeah, absolutely. Great to be having this conversation, and well done on Craig Elkey. I was fortunate to have a great career in international banking for around 30 years, working mainly with companies of all sizes in different sectors. I was also lucky enough to live and work in that period in three continents, here in the UK, over in California, in the US, and also in Hong Kong. So very fortunate indeed. And in my latter role, I led teams in another 15 countries, a real eclectic mix of developing and developed economies, ranging from Armenia and Russia in the east, through Europe, down to South Africa, and as far west as Bermuda. But for most of my career, banking was still quite heavily male-dominated. So as one of a relatively small number of senior women, I was regularly approached by more junior or younger colleagues to mentor them. And I found that incredibly rewarding, and the feedback was really nice. So when my senior role at the bank was changing back in November 2017, I thought it was an ideal opportunity to step out of banking and do something different. And I want to stay involved with companies, so I'm building a small portfolio of non-exec director roles. But I also want to continue to help companies and individuals be the best they can be. So I set up my own small business, Craig Elkey, and I provide a bit of business consultancy, but mainly I do coaching and mentoring for leaders and aspiring leaders. I did a postgrad when I left the bank in executive coaching and mentoring. So
where was that?
Through the Institute of Leadership and Management. And I'm looking to bring together, I guess, my coaching and mentoring skills with my years of business and leadership experience to provide coaching and mentoring that's empathetic and supportive, but also practical and challenging.
Okay, so in the startup world especially, there's a lot of talk around mentoring and coaching, and a lot of what happens on some of the accelerator incubator programs is all about that. So first question is, what's the difference between a mentor and a coach?
That's a really good question, because there's tons of confusion. So if I start with what they both are, and then I can explain in what ways they're different. So what they both are is continuous learning in a supportive, non-judgmental environment. They're both very action focused, so they should focus on the present and the future, not really on the past. Where they become different is that coaching is entirely non-directive. So what that means is that the coach should be asking questions, providing challenge, feedback that helps the coachee to think for themselves, come to their own conclusions, decide on the actions they want to take, and follow through. So the coach absolutely should not be telling you what to do and how to do it.
And it's as well self-realization.
Exactly, exactly. Mentoring is a bit more directive. It's still not telling you what to do, it's more advising. But you're really using the mentor's knowledge and experience to guide the mentee. So perhaps the mentor has been through a similar situation before, and he can suggest solutions to where the mentee's at. But there's a much more kind of guidance and plotting the future or the way forward together.
Okay, so let's say someone is thinking about having mentoring or having coaching. What should they be looking for when they're seeking out a mentor or coach?
Okay, so the personal qualities are really similar. You want somebody who's a great listener, and listening not to think of the next question, but actually listening to understand, and also listening for what you're not saying as much as what you are saying. You want somebody with great emotional intelligence, to use that buzzword, Because you want them to be empathetic and supportive of your situation, but you also need them to be a bit detached so that they can support or challenge as appropriate. And you want someone that you feel some kind of connection with so that you think you can build a trusting relationship really quickly, because being able to be open and honest with that individual is the only way that the coaching relationship can work. So there needs to be some kind of click. Aside of personal qualities, the kind of background and experience of the coach and mentor is probably different. So because the coach, as I said, is not providing the answers, purists would tell you that a coach doesn't need to have relevant experience at all. They can coach in any sector. I would argue that having business experience or leadership experience, not necessarily in the same sector, is helpful, particularly in the early stages, because I think it means the coach just gets quicker some of the external stuff about the organization's agenda or the business situation, so that you can move on quite quickly to the more internal stuff. Whereas in mentoring, actually the mentor's experience and knowledge is what is of value to the mentee. So there you want somebody, not necessarily that's been in your sector, but has been through very similar experiences to what it is that you're going through now. So that might be fundraising in a fast growth company, or that might be taking a company international. So there the experience is much more relevant than for a coach.
So, I mean, what's the process here? So let's say I want to engage with a mentor or a coach. Let's say I'm engaging with you. What happens in the first steps? How does the engagement look?
Okay, so the first step, whether it's an individual coming to me or whether it's a company coming to me saying they want several of the employees coached, is just a simple telephone conversation. And I'm looking for two questions, kind of, what exactly does the coach you need help with? And do I have the right skills and experience to help, to provide that help? And if the answer is no, then I'll try and point them in the direction of someone better placed than me. If the answer is yes, then we'll move on to a much more in-depth session, either face-to-face or Skype or telephone. I work with quite a few individuals overseas, so the face-to-face just isn't possible. I call that the chemistry and contracting session, which sounds very grand, but it's free, because afterwards we'll decide either to work together or to go our separate ways. And the chemistry bit is about that connection. Do we think that we can work together well? Am I going to be the right person to give you support, challenge, etc.? The contracting is really important, and it's probably the bit I learned most from the qualification I did. And I guess it's a bit like laying down really solid foundations on which you're going to build the house. So there you're going to work out exactly how we would work together. And we're going to talk about things like confidentiality, who owns what in the relationship, what are the behaviours we expect of each other, and then things like logistics, which the coachee decides. So how long do you want the session to be? So one of my clients likes a two-hour session because he wants to be able to go really deep into his thinking. One of my clients won't do longer than an hour because she loses concentration because you're thinking quite hard in that period. Or where would we hold them if they're face to face? One of my coachees has it in an office at their workplace because they don't want to be interrupted once they've gone to a train of thought. One of my other clients always wants to go to a coffee shop because just that physical step out from your work environment can help you be a bit more creative in your thinking because you've kind of left your work constraints behind.
So is it something that, you know, you would, obviously it's a regular basis, so how long do people usually engage with you for? I mean, is it years or a week?
No, and again, that's the difference between coaching and mentoring. Coaching is very, you're aiming for quite a specific goal, you hope. So it's typically shorter, so it might be 3, 6, 9 months, depending what it is that you're trying to work through. Mentoring tends to be a longer term relationship, and the goals are more wide ranging often, so they'll kind of follow you through the career a bit more. Coaching can step in and out. One of my clients, this is the third time that I've worked with her because she's been at different stages in her career and needed different types of help at different times.
So when do you think, I mean, so a lot of people listen to this wondering, well, do I need it? How do you kind of know that this is something that you need?
Yeah, well, I'd say from a business, I'd say any time at all would be fantastic. But no, I would say when you think there is something you want to achieve, even if you're not quite sure exactly what that is. So let me give you some examples or some scenarios from my experience. So it might be you have a positive ambition. You really want to get promoted. You really want to get your business motoring. And you want to work out how you're going to make that happen. Or it might be you're already in a really positive place. You've just been promoted or you've set up your business, but you want to make sure you make a success of those first 100 days or whatever. So giving yourself time to work how you're going to make that happen. You might, frankly, just be really unclear. So you might be at a crossroads in your professional life or the business might have stalled. And you know you need to do something to get clarity and plot what the path ahead should look like for you. Or it might be an adverse situation. You might have had some adverse feedback at work, or you might have been passed over for a promotion that you were expecting, and you know you need to do something differently. Often, whatever the scenario, people know they need to do something different, but finding time to give that real constructive thought is really difficult because you've got all the stuff going on in your business, all the stuff going on in personal life, commitments, and coaching can give you that dedicated time to think about it and just that safe space to work through things. Often it might be something you don't want to go and talk to your boss about because you don't want them to know you've got a problem, in inverted commas, or you don't want to talk to your partner because they're going to have their own agenda. So a coach or a mentor brings you somebody dispassionate with no agenda that's just there to help you work through whatever it is you want to work through.
So, I mean, there's an interesting topic here kind of around mental health within business. And, you know, I talk, obviously, working alongside lots of different entrepreneurs, and there's lots of ups and downs and roller coaster rides that go on with that. And, you know, on a daily basis, people are thinking this is the right thing to do. So how much, you know, is coaching, mentoring, how much can it help along this journey to kind of ease your mind? And because from what I'm hearing, what you're saying is that you can come in and solve specific issues, or you can kind of personal growth, but then there's a kind of another aspect out there as well, kind of keeping staying sane.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So with either of them, but particularly with coaching, you're going to set your overarching goals. So it might be you come to me to say, I'm on a really fast track trajectory with the business. I need somebody as a sounding board, not to give me advice, but just to give me that space to think. So we'll set the kind of overarching goal of in 9 months, you want your business to be wherever it is. But for each session, you're going to set the agenda. And that session might be something positive. You know, I'm starting to build this great network. I want to work out how I make the most of it. Or it might just be, actually, I've had a hell of a month. Things are not on track. And I just need to work out what that feels like. And some of it will be, you know, I've had clients that come in and for an hour-long session, the first 45 minutes is just venting because they just need somewhere safe to get it off the chest. They can't talk to their team because their team might be the problem. They can't talk to the investor might be the problem. They just want somebody to talk. And we'll try and work out how to dial down that emotion and point it in a more positive way. I'm not a counsellor or a therapist, so if we get to a point where there's something where I think more professional help is needed, I'll call that out. But in terms of just having that sounding board and safe space, I think it can be immensely powerful.
So how do you know the coaching or mentoring is actually working?
Yeah, great question. So for the individual, it's something we'll try and work out up front. So what is the goal and how are we going to measure progress towards it? Coaching or mentoring, but coaching in particular, should involve change. So we're going to say, well, actually, what will that change look like? What will be the different behaviours? How will that feel for you? How will you know you're doing different behaviours? How will I see that? Or how will your colleagues see it? Or so we'll try and set out quite clear signposts along the way. If I'm working with a coachee and their organisation, we want the organisation to feel it's not just about the individual getting benefit, but the organisation too. So again, we'll work out what is the benefit they're looking for. Is it reduced turnover of talent? Is it increased customer satisfaction? Is it something financial? And we'll say, okay, how are we going to measure that? we're going to set a benchmark up front and then we'll measure again. That might be a 360 degree feedback, and then we do it again 9 months later. And for me, I ask for feedback at each session. I have regular reviews, which we'll agree up front how often and what they're going to look like, and also at the end. And I'm looking to see, is the relationship effective? Do you feel you're getting benefit? I'm looking to see, is it productive? Are we actually getting to our goals? But I'm also looking for feedback along the way to say, is this working for you? Is it the right level of challenge, if you like? It's a bit of the Goldilocks scenario. You don't want a relationship that's too soft and comfy, but you don't want one that's scarily challenging. You want one that's giving you the right level of being thought-provoking, being supportive, being challenging, and we'll tailor that to what the individual.
So essentially you should feel that you're being pushed in the right direction.
Exactly.
There should be material changes to something around you.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've worked with a lot of teams around the world. You know, I've worked with, again, I've managed teams in different countries as well. What kind of advice would you give to people that are looking to manage teams? And from a, I guess, in a way, it's how do you kind of bring those different types of cultures together? How did you manage diverse teams' culture together?
So I'm a huge believer in the importance of leadership. I spoke on this topic at the IOD conference in Scotland last year. Because not only is it key to the success of the organisation, but to your earlier point, it's key for the well-being of the individuals in that organisation or interacting with the organisation. There's a couple of things that I think a leader needs. So, vision. I think now more than ever, people want to know what it is that they're working towards. What is the purpose? And we all know the story of the janitor at NASA who was mopping the floor and told JFK he was working to put a man on the moon. And we all love that story. And I think it's because intrinsically we know that we want to understand what is that purpose and what is our role in achieving that purpose. So the leader's got a key role in setting it, in communicating it. And I think in particular, if you have a globally spread team, it's important that the leader makes sure each individual understands that within their own context of wherever they are and knows how they in turn are contributing to that vision, to the purpose. The other thing is, as you mentioned, is diversity. No one leader has all the answers, and neither do a group of people that all think in the same way, the dreaded group think. Getting the diversity of thought, so not just the traditional, you know, gender, race, age, disability, but that diversity of thought, I think is key to organisations functioning well. And so it's about a leader creating the environment where everybody feels safe and confident in bringing their ideas or their concerns to the table and knowing that they'll be listened to and not just kind of dismissed in some way.
So yeah, there was an analogy, I think one of my ex-bosses said to me a while ago, is that, you know, you try and build a wall around your team so that, you know, inside the wall, you can have free discussion, and outside it, you have a single face to the business.
Yeah.
So I like the way of that.
Yeah, no, I really like that.
So talk a little bit about women in business. How have you seen things change? Obviously, you know, you've had a very illustrious career, you're very high up in HSBC. How have you seen things change from a, you know, from the angle of diversity? So not just, you know, gender diversity as well as cultural diversity. Have you seen improvements? Do you think things are moving in the right direction or not?
I think they're moving in the right direction. I don't think they're moving fast enough. I think there's a lot more awareness of the benefits of diversity, not for it being a good thing to do, but that actually there are genuine benefits to the business in having that diversity of thought around the table. I think there is, I hate making generalizations about men and women, but in the coaching practice, I do see it coming through. So, for example, I think women tend to doubt their own abilities more than men do. And there's a lot of talk nowadays about imposter syndrome, and some very well-known women, Michelle Obama, has come out and said that even she suffers from it. And that's where you doubt if you're good enough to be in your job, and you fear you're going to be found out. I think there's a lot more understanding of that. And something like coaching can be incredibly helpful to that, because there's lots of ways to work your way through it. And it's so It's great. I had a client that suffered exactly this when she'd moved from one sector to another. She wasn't seeing that she really brought something to the table. Why did they hire me? And actually, when, at the end of our sessions, when she said, you know, that little doubting voice in my own head that was undermining me, it's just gone. That's incredibly, incredibly powerful. The other thing that I think I see quite often is that women are great at using their networks to help other people. They're much less good at using them to help themselves. And again, it can be quite powerful if you can challenge those inner beliefs around why that's actually a good thing to do, and help them progress much faster by engaging the right help, support, whether it's mentors or sponsors within the business.
So what do you think that can be done to promote more women in business now? I mean, obviously, there's changes in the law on directorships, etc.
Good question. I'm a big believer in engaging men in the conversation. There's a lot now of, there's a lot of women's programs which can be helpful around some of these challenges around belief or confidence or impact. Presence, but I'm not a fan of kind of women-only programs to progress, because we've got to do it in tandem with the guys. It's not that women are better than men, it's just that they're a bit different, and actually you need the men to understand that as much as you need the women to understand that. I think this might be a bit controversial, but there's quite a lot of studies in the US that show that the Me Too program has thrown up unintended consequences. So men are more reluctant now to provide one-on-one mentoring to women because they might be at risk of being accused of doing something untoward. I think, frankly, that's nonsense. Because, you know, your one-to-one mentoring doesn't have to be over a cozy dinner in a romantic restaurant that might raise eyebrows. So I think that is hugely unhelpful, and we need to get men to step up and provide the advice and guidance. Because if you rely on women to mentor other women, yes, they might understand some of the issues, but there's just not as many women in senior positions. So you're only getting a small slice of the pie.
So this is a bit of a left field question, because we met the IOD, and I've been thinking about this for a while now. Obviously, IOD has programs like the IOD 99 to help entrepreneurs. And I know when I talk to some of those guys on that program, one of the biggest issues is that they don't have access to people like yourself. So the people who've been through the experience and who've worked in big multinational businesses have, you know, worked with diverse teams across the globe. What do you think can be done more in that respect to bring together some of the next generation and people like yourself who've got probably a great network? I was about to say final facts, but that'll date me. Rolodex will date me as well. But, you know, the contact network you have would be amazing. And it's not necessarily just to use a network to win more business. It's more about using the network to kind of help people understand that the problems that they face as a startup are the same problems that people have faced for many, many years, right? You're not alone in that sense. Do you think there's much more that can be done by people like the IOD or other organisations?
I'm sure there is. I'm not sure exactly what. I think one of the challenges maybe, like you kind of alluded to it there with the final facts and data, I think some of the leaders that have come out of large organizations think, well, actually, is my experience relevant to a startup? You know, I don't get their tech thing, whatever it is. Not realizing that actually they don't need help with the tech thing. That's not what they're looking for. What they're looking for, as you say, is that network that can help them navigate some of the stages of their businesses. I'm not sure. What do you think, having been on the other side of the table?
I think there's a big missed opportunity generally, because I've been up in Scotland for the FinTech Festival, and there's been a number of presentations on growth and scale and taking businesses from, let's say, 10 to 50 to 50 to 100, 100 to 700. Mm. What I found quite interesting is that, you know, in the previous life, those who know me well, we scaled business across globally. We went from 0 to 50 in a couple of years, and, you know, multinational, we had offices in 4 or 5 different countries. And, you know, all of the challenges that we faced there, and I saw the slides and thinking, well, that's exactly the same thing. So, and I kind of thought, well, we're not all learning from each other's experiences, really, because you went through it at the same time I went through it. And why we never, you know, how can we never kind of, how come there's no bridge between us to tell us that actually this is, you know, we're all going through the same thing, you're not crazy, you know, it's hard, and you're going to have to suffer these things along the way. And I think there's a huge missed opportunity at the IRD, but simply because there are so many people with this experience there, and it doesn't have to be taking, you know, being, you know, the head of commercial banking at HSBC. It could be you that just running out a small division within a business that is looking to expand out or innovating, and then you've done it, but you've hit the same struggles. It doesn't have to be like a big company that's doing it. It can be a smaller business or a division within a large company that can do it and can share those experiences. And I don't think there's not just we're just not doing it. I think the only way to do it is to kind of actually force people in a room, right? It's to say, look, okay, we're going to have these directors of X number of companies. You're going to have to go and talk to me. And just go and have that initial conversation, because once you realize that there's a lot of commonality there, then there'll be other ways that once you've understood that commonality exists, you'll be able to kind of then find ways of replicating that and spreading that knowledge and message out. So I think there's a lot to be done, and I think there's a lot can be done, but just no one seems to take it bull by the horns and do it. So maybe that's an initiative that we can put forward.
Yeah, I think so. I think, as you say, it's a great opportunity, and you find unexpected connections when you're in the room with a diverse bunch of people. So
I think there's also a little bit to blame on our side as well. I mean, I go to those events and I meet people like you said. It's not like you're hiding, right? You're there, and it's just a matter of going across and talking to you, right? So that's how we have this conversation. So I think there's a lot to be said for people just getting out there and going to these events. I mean, it's not hard to find them, right? It's all there. So generally, how do you think this, you know, from your experience over the years, how have things changed from career development perspectives?
Yeah, I think at the risk of aging myself, over the years I've seen tons of change, lots for the better, some not so good. I guess in terms of career, you know, when I stepped into my career, it maybe wasn't the same firm for life, but there was still an expectation of the same career for life. And that's just gone now for a whole raft of reasons. It can be really unsettling for some people, but I think if you're the type of individual that likes continuous learning, likes fresh challenge, there's an opportunity now to kind of reinvent your career on a regular basis. There's a great book, The 100-Year Life, which talks about that and how now that we're all living longer, actually that's what we're going to have to do. You can't possibly go through the same cycle that I went through of, you know, you do school, you do university or your professional training or whatever, and then you're just going to work. Actually, you're going to have to do maybe a bit more exploratory stuff earlier, then you're going to work for a bit, then you're going to have to retrain in something different. But I think that's an exciting opportunity.
Which is interesting, that, because I think what you see in the UK is that if you have a CV like that, people are kind of a little bit suspicious.
Yeah.
Whereas in the US, that's a strength.
Yeah.
The fact that you've done many different things is a strength. Whereas here, people are looking for why don't you concentrate on one thing?
Yeah.
And I hear that a lot. It's like, well, you run a couple of businesses, why don't you concentrate on one thing? And I'm like, well, why?
Yeah.
What is the reason for that? And obviously, there is a time issue. You know, you can't allocate the same amount of time. But if you're organized, there's no reason why you can't.
Yeah, absolutely. And it keeps you fresh and engaged and excited. And I think that will change. I think leadership has changed, but needs to change further. So hierarchies, command and control, I think they waste a huge amount of talent because people aren't encouraged to show initiative, to take ownership. And I think the younger generations coming into the workplace simply won't go with that type of leadership style. Again, there's a really good book called Turn the Ship, which shows how much more powerful leader-leader model is rather than leader-follower, even in something as structured as a US Navy submarine, which is where this leader kind of learned his craft. So I think that has further to change yet to really get the most out of everybody that's in an organization.
Another kind of unscripted question, I would say. What leaders would you admire? I mean, is there anyone out there that springs to mind that you think, okay, this person is a perfect embodiment of leadership? Wow, perfect. But anyway.
At the risk of sounding cliche, probably Richard Branson, because he has done that, reinvent himself, and a lot of his fundamental beliefs align with mine in terms of surrounding yourself with great people or people that are brighter than you are, giving them the empowerment, although that's a very cliched word, but encouraging them to really take the responsibility and the ownership. So probably Branson.
All right, so we're just nearing the end of the podcast now. The final question that I ask everyone, if you could go back in time 20 years and talk to your younger self, what advice would you give yourself?
I would say don't be afraid to be different and speak up more. So when I, particularly in my early years of senior management, I was very conscious. I was the youngest of my peers and I was often the only female in the room. And there's definitely times when that led me to be a bit more reserved than is my normal personality and not speak up when I should. And weirdly, it took moving to California, where I was still the youngest and more or less the only female, but also a foreigner, to actually kind of the light bulb moment of that, the stuff that makes me different is actually my strength, not my weakness, and that I can lead others and actually inspire others by putting value on those different perspectives.
That's interesting, actually, you talk about weaknesses and strengths. There's one, I was having a discussion actually on another podcast where we're talking about what people try to do a lot when they're, let's say, coaching or mentoring or they're leading a team. They try to bring up people's weaknesses. So let's say it's an unbalanced team, you try and work on people's weaknesses and bring them up. And I'm much more a believer that, okay, if you're weak at something, you're weak at something, fine, but you're good at other things, just play to your strengths and do more of what you're good at and less of what you're not so good at.
Absolutely. The whole good to great. And I do a lot of that in coaching, particularly if you are a leader, because you have the luxury of surrounding yourself with people that are good at the stuff you're not good at. But if you are self-aware enough to know actually what you are, what are your strengths and how you build on those and use those for the company's benefit, and then the other stuff that needs done that's not your area of strength, find somebody where that really floats their boat and they're great at that piece, and then you have a genuinely powerful team.
Excellent. Well, thanks for your time today.
Not at all. A real pleasure. Thank you.